The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled Rising, Resilience, and Revolution, Essence Ventures CEO and President Caroline Wanga explores Black women as chief executive officers of home, culture, and community, and focuses on helping every Black woman recognize the chief that already exists within her by introducing the ones who live among us. Hello, family. It's me, Caroline Wanga, President and CEO of Essence Ventures, excited to bring you another edition of Chief to Chief. This one in particular is with a woman I have had on my list to talk with for quite a while, and I have the honor of engaging with her on this platform. As a reminder, Chief to Chief is a platform about meeting women around the world who are playing chief roles in communities, playing chief roles in corporate settings, playing chief roles in countries. We are telling the stories of both what they do and who they are, so you can be inspired to find the chief within you and the change you are supposed to make in the world. Today, I invite you to a conversation like no other. Here's the Vice President of the country of Colombia, Madam Vice President Francia Marquez. Enjoy. Caroline Wanga asks the question. I would like to start with the question, who is Francia Marquez? How would you answer that? Francia Marquez responded, Hello, Caroline. Thank you for inviting me in the first place to participate in this wonderful program. Describing oneself is always a little difficult. However, I am because we are. I am a part of a community. I cannot identify myself because what I am and what I represent today are part of a people, of a collective struggle. So I am the memory of my grandmother, of the women of my community who have fought to defend the land, who have fought for their identity, who have fought to break the chains of oppression. I am part of a heritage and a history that did not begin with slavery, that goes much further. I am part of a story that began on the motherland, on the African continent. I am an Afro-descendant woman. I recognize myself. I determine myself as such, reaffirming our identity and our ways. I am part of an extended family that has historically fought for the freedom and dignity of people who have lived a significant number of oppressions, such as slavery, racism, and discrimination. And, well, I am a woman who raises her voice like many other women in Colombia, in Africa, and in the world. Caroline Wanga asks another question. Can you tell me what it means to be Afro-Colombian? If you were to educate people on that, what does that mean? Marquez responded, This is a very important question. First, I want to say that Colombia is one of the countries of the Americas that has the largest Afro-Latin population, first in Brazil and then the United States, and the third largest is Colombia. However, when you go to other places, that is not recognized. Being an Afro-descendant or Black woman in Colombia is not an easy task. It means carrying many racial stereotypes shapes, and still living a colonial history that has marked our lives in some way. It is also a show of resistance. Afro-descendant women have resisted all forms of oppressions and exclusions. Mwanga asks the question, I am so proud of you and admire you so much. So, if that is the background of being Afro-Colombian, how did you make it to being vice president? What was that journey for you? Marquez responded, well, I thought about becoming vice president because it is something that I owe to the women of my community. What I owe to my grandmother, who is 93 years old, and she is a woman who does not know how to read and write, but she is a woman who taught me the value of life. And my community taught me the value of construction, of collective care. I am the daughter of a midwife who had to give birth alone to her 6 children, but she learned to care for other women. And that care, that of seeing ourselves as a family widespread among Black people, that happens in my country. That has allowed Black people in Colombia to resist and to remain collective, to see ourselves as a community. We do not have the vision of mom, dad, and son. We are an extended family, and we see each other that way. And that vision, that relationship, taught me to be a leader from a very young age. I wanted to be an actress, a singer, but I saw the women in my community struggling to defend their territory as a living space. I saw the women of my community fighting to stop the illegal mining that was destroying the land. I saw the women of my community planting the land to feed their children, and that experience helped me be part of that fight socially, collectively, and taught me to raise my voice. And a lot of Black women started telling me, yeah, come on, do that. And many young people said, we are going to support that. And we began to carry out a whole political campaign process from the heart without any financial resources, but with a conviction for change. And that is why today I am the vice president of my country. My people heard me. My people heard me as a reflection of their silent voices. My people saw me as a voice that could resonate in many places, and that is what I continue to do. Wanga asks another question. So, one of the things that is on your agenda is Africa. Why is that connection important for Colombia? Marquez responded, well, I think this is a historical debt that exists between Afro-descendant peoples and the African continent. We are very aware in Colombia that our roots are in Africa. We are very aware that as people of African descent, we have an African heritage. And for many years, what we were told and shown about Africa were children with flies in their mouths, miserable people, and poor. And when people asked where we come from, the only story we knew was, you are descendants of slaves. The emancipation processes that we have carried out in our country in some way have taught me to understand that we are not descendants of slaves, that we are descendants of free African men and women who were enslaved. Mwanga asks another question. So, my last question for the many people who will get to see this, what advice would you give them on how to play a role from the chief chair in changing the things in their community that are not right for them? What advice would you give them? Marquise responded, "Well, I want to first congratulate the work that Essence does and what you do with your entire team. I believe that this platform is already an example of what needs to be done. In many of our communities, our people grow up without political, social, cultural, economic references. Our people sometimes believe that we do not have the right to occupy certain spaces and places, but the place we must occupy is the one that society has imposed on us. And I think breaking away from that is part of the challenge, because the color of the skin cannot define the place we must occupy. We have the right to occupy the place we want. And now that I am in the vice presidency, I have to be strong, because there are white racist people who have said that the vice presidency is not my place. They consider that my place is still to work in a family home as a domestic service employee. They have this vision that we cannot occupy spaces of power. My main message is for the boys and girls, Afro descendants and indigenous people, and for women, that they do not feel ashamed of their identity, of their history. We must wear our blackness with pride, our identity with pride. They made us feel ashamed of who we are. Women are also made to feel that we are not capable, that we have to obey and remain silent. And I think it's time for us to speak up and take leadership. When I go to the most marginalized territories of my country, I see the black children. They come and hug me and cry and tell me, "I'm going to study because I want to be like you." That didn't happen before. See what the boys and girls of my country want to be? Presidents. They want to be actors or actresses. They want to be, well, anything. It's very important. Historically, in many moments, the children of our country just wanted to be a part of an armed group in our territories because of what they have seen. They only saw armed groups, and they only wanted to have a rifle in their hand to do the same thing they were being taught. Today, we are changing those paradigms. We have the first minister of education in my country, in this government, who is a woman of African descent. The Ministry of Education had never been occupied by an Afro-descendant woman, because education was supposed to be imparted not by us or addressed not by us, but by someone who does not have our skin color. Changing that is part of the message that the world has to receive. We have to continue building in the community. I think a lot about economics. I believe that we Afro descendants have to articulate and unite in terms of economic strengthening, because our people live in precarious conditions without access to drinking water, without access to education, without decent housing, and that is not right. But we can only move forward if we work together. The unity between peoples has to be referenced. It has to be a bet. That's why I'm trying to make bilateral diplomatic connections with some African countries, multilateral with all African countries if possible. I think it offers the possibility of reconnecting with our identity culturally, economically, and also puts together agendas for debate and political discussion that we have to push, such as the challenges of climate change. I believe that each person has their own ability to be a leader. I believe there is no rule that tells one how to be a leader. You simply have to listen to the heart and work to help your community. And you should have enough strength to fight and uphold your conviction of justice. Mwanga stated, Madam Vice President, I am humbled. I am honored. I am activated to play whatever role you need me to as a Black woman and Essence Ventures as a Black platform to drive this mission forward. This is the way in which we right the wrongs that divided our people, and anything we can do to be in support of that, consider me there. The next article is titled, Black Love is Bankable. Luxury event planners talk industry shifts, trends for 2024, and the most lavish Black celebrity weddings they have orchestrated. While the act of marriage is a celebration of love and commitment here in the United States, weddings are also big business. And best believe, the multi-billion dollar industry is cashing in on Black love. Although 2020 may have seen a decline for the industry with postponements and cancellations related to COVID-19 quarantines, weddings are now returning to pre-pandemic levels. The year 2023 saw 2.24 million weddings in the U.S., up 62% since 2020, according to Zipia, an online job search website, and there seems to be no slowdown in sight. The post-pandemic surge of nuptials is projected to grow to a staggering $413.98 billion industry by 2030, more than double the $160.5 billion spent on weddings in 2020. Not surprisingly, it's all shifting with the times. That means the next few years will not only see an uptick in the number of couples saying their I do's, but also wedding planners, DJs, caterers, photographers, and per guest cost will all become more expensive. How does an industry centered on love keep that sentiment as the foundation when so many millions of dollars are being spent on these elaborate celebrations globally each year? Well, it's a challenge for sure. Inflation and high demand for wedding services mean the real driver of love from the perspective of weddings is money. The increase in weddings will likely cause the overall prices to rise. Products and services may be in shorter supply. Businesses may become short-staffed. And the soaring cost of travel, as well as the general unpredictability of airlines, may threaten to disrupt everyone's plans. Inflation has certainly made us alter our vision a bit for our wedding in order to not exceed our budget, says Jillian Carter, a Washington, D.C. based May 2024 bride who will be getting married at Casa de Campo Resort and Villas in La Romea, Dominican Republic. Lucky for us, our wedding planners have been able to negotiate better rates on our behalf. Wedding planners are just a percentage of an engaged couple's overall budget, but in the era of social media and doing it for the gram, planners are tasked with coming up with concepts that are becoming more and more over the top. Tori Williams, for example, is a world-renowned celebrity event planner, a designer, and a co-star of VH1's original series My Celebrity Dream Wedding. In her line of work, she has produced events for T.I., K. Michelle, Will Packer, former Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, and more. She has seen it all and done it all. On a day-to-day basis, she is managing bigger budgets, longer guest lists, and grander ideas. The highest budget wedding I've done was near seven figures, says Williams, though she's unable to share the who. The what consisted of custom Swarovski crystal chandeliers enclosed by lush white orchids, more than 100,000 fresh florals throughout the ceremony and reception, and an A-list Grammy-winning performer. Hiring a wedding planner is the best investment you can make, she insists. It's like hiring a great attorney to represent you. The planner is there to negotiate for you and make decisions that are in the best interest of the couple. They can make the planning process a stress-free, enjoyable, and memorable experience for the couple. Despite the inevitable bumps that will come as we see the economy continue to shift, couples will continue to plan original weddings that are infused with joyful energy. Luxury wedding planner, floral designer, and entrepreneur Akishi Akinsi of Keish Events identifies three trends that will rule the 2024 destination wedding sphere: personalized and meaningful endeavors, culturally immersive entertainment, and multi-day celebrations. These extended celebrations allow couples to spend more quality time with their guests and offer a more in-depth and regal experience. With a knack for bringing elegance, creativity, and personalization to every event, she is up for the challenge. Couples are moving away from the traditional and embracing ceremonies and receptions that are a true reflection of their unique love stories and preferences, she says. This shift is particularly evident in the realm of entertainment. It's an era that transcends the conventional DJ-only setup. We are witnessing an upsurge in a range of the finest entertainment options, including ceremony chores, innovative band and DJ fusions, captivating dancers, and enchanting singers. But this isn't just about music. It's about crafting an experience that will linger in the memories of the guest long after the event. For NBA star Tobias Harris and his bride, Jasmine Winton, she added a personal touch to a grand event that began even before guests walked through the door. The Save the Date was a customized wine box, complete with an individualized bottle, with the same level of specific attention carried through the wedding itself. Our goal was to craft a unique experience for every part of the wedding celebration, focusing on distinctive entertainment, decor, lighting, and more, says the Chicago-based planner. The spectacular fireworks display was particularly memorable, adding to the grandeur of the event. Each element, each moment of the wedding was intricately woven to not just tell their story, but to celebrate it in a way that was as unique as their bond. This wedding, in all its glory, was not just a milestone for the couple, but also a landmark in my career. It symbolized the essence of trust and collaboration and the pursuit of excellence in celebration. While the wedding industry may be shifting, one thing remains. Black love is continuing to thrive, and as long as it does, the industry will continue to bank on it. The next article is titled Beauty Scoop. Just like Queen Bey, members of Teen Essence are all about the goodies that give you that special glow. Vaseline is so versatile. I use it for everything, especially my chapped lips during winter months. Raina Reed Rayford, contributing editor. Eyebrow fillers give your brows life without the exorbitant cost of tinting or lamination. Dana Storm Santiago, Senior Sales Partnership Director. TikTok has forced me into adding snail mucin as part of my daily facial routine. Josie Whitman, Vice President Finance. Undefined Beauties R&R Sun Cream SPF 50 has loads of yummy ingredients for my combo skin and leaves no white cast. Kara Cahoon, Director, Product Management. I can't live without Paula's Choice Skin Perfecting 2% BHA Liquid Exfoliant. I truly believe it has knocked a few years off my mug. Corey Stokes, Senior Vice President, Creative. I've always wanted a perfume that people take in when I enter the room and ask, "What is that?" I have found one in the warm aroma of DipTQ's Orphan. Victoria, Senior Lifestyle Editor. My cannot live without item is Face Gems Pure Lift Facial Toning Device. I think of it as Pilates for the face, snatched all around. Carrie Richardson, Vice President, Sales Activation. The natural ingredients in Khaleesi's Bounty and Full Skin Food are great for hyperpigmentation and anti-aging. Have you seen her skin lately? Sold. Kowloon Experimental Director. My holy grail, tretinoin, is prescribed by my dermatologist. It helps minimize pores and dark spots after a breakout. Sabla Stays, Art Director. The next article is titled Youth Advocate Programs Inc. At age 15, Blessing is excited about her future. But not long ago, when she lost her mother, she said she was depressed, resentful, and impulsive. And she fought a lot. Blessing's school referred her to Youth Advocate Programs, YAP, Inc., where she began working with a smart, compassionate behavioral health services professional who empowered her with tools to manage her anger and set boundaries and positive goals. YAP advocates and behavioral health staff empower individuals and families impacted by trauma and complex challenges with resources to redirect their lives. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.